From Sacramento, the Bishop's Radio Hour with Bob Dunning. Focusing on today's issues in the context of gospel values. Now, here's Bob Dunning on Relevant Radio.
That's me. Welcome to you on this beautiful day the Lord has made. As it's turned from summer to fall all of a sudden here in the Sacramento Diocese. Appreciate you all being with us. This is the day the Lord has made. Let us rejoice and be glad in it. And we're glad to be welcoming in Blake Young, the president and CEO of Sacramento Food Bank and Family Services. Blake, good day to you.
Good day to you, Bob. How are you?
I'm great, and I see those declining numbers of COVID in our region, which is good news for everybody, but especially good news for you guys, I think.
You bet. We're ready. We're ready for Run to Feed the Hungry, and we're ready for this weather to cool down a bit so people can run or walk, if you will. But we're just excited to have another Run to Feed the Hungry in the physical sense.
Yeah. Every time I think about you guys, I think about the weather, and then I check the COVID, and I go, you've never had a heat problem in Run to Feed the Hungry. A few times it has sprinkled, a little water from heaven has come down, but most of the time you've been quite blessed with, good, chilly, late November air.
Yeah, we have been so blessed with the weather over the years. In fact, it's really only rained after the start, or after the gun went off one time. And so we've had a few drizzles before the event started, but no, we've been very lucky and very blessed to have good weather.
Yeah, and this is, you last year you couldn't have it, you had it virtual, and yet this year you said, we're gonna plan positive, and then if something comes up and we have to change, we'll change. But we're gonna plan with a positive attitude here, and as of today, it's looking pretty good.
Yeah, it looks good, and hunger doesn't take a vacation. So we gotta march forward and think positive, and the Run to Feed the Hungry is such an important part of part of our identity, but also financially, it's very good for us, and it's a really good chance for us to use that as a platform to talk about hunger, food insecurity, and other issues. So. We're just, from day one, when we started talking about the run this year, we're like, we're going to do it. And again, if the public and if things change, we'll obviously modify to make sure the public stays safe. But for right now, we're going to keep marching forward and have the run.
That's just wonderful. And it's really a double whammy for you guys. Not only is it a major fundraiser, which is wonderful, but the publicity and the very positive publicity, making people aware of hunger, making people aware of Sacramento Food Bank and Family Services and all the things you do. I mean, it's way better than if somebody just wrote you a check for the amount and you didn't have the event, because you're getting such wonderful coverage out of it.
We are. And, it's such a wonderful opportunity for us to have volunteers for donors and corporations and families to contribute, and for all of us collectively to just acknowledge that there's folks, particularly during COVID, but even not during COVID, that struggle to put good food on the table, and this wonderful event represents our collective caring for people in our community.
So the Run to Feed the Hungry, upwards of 25 to 30,000 people participating. How many volunteers, leading up to it and then on the day of, how many volunteers does that involve to pull something like that off?
Approximately 150.
Wow.
So we are, again, blessed to have so many repeat volunteers over the years. Families do it together, moms and sons, dads and daughters. A lot of retired folks. It's just a fun event, and if folks aren't, and a lot of our volunteers sign up as virtual because they can't do the event because they're volunteering, but they sign up just to make sure that the organization is well financed through the event. So it just overall it's just such a wonderful family tradition, and just such a great opportunity for us to share in our care.
How many people were at the first Run to Feed the Hungry?
As I understand it, it was 694.
Well, that's pretty good for number one.
Number one, and then I got involved soon thereafter, and, you know, it just, it's been really neat to see it, you know, expand, become the number one or the largest Thanksgiving Day run in the country, and, you know, it's such a perfect neighborhood for folks. It's so beautiful with the fall colors and all the trees. East Sacramento is such a beautiful neighborhood. All the families come out. So many impromptu parties and folks playing music and whatnot.
Yeah.
It's just such a kick. It's just such a kick.
So has it changed much over the years other than size? Have you had to modify or do something different?
Yeah, I mean, logistically, it's changed a lot. And it's kind of changed with the times, if you think about it, because once 9/11 hit, the concern became security. And then as time went on, security became a more and more of an issue. Now, we've never really had any issues, but I think, you know, an event that large, people take a little bit more precaution. Obviously, traffic, as the race has grown, car traffic has been something we've had to mitigate.
Mm-hmm.
And then as the race has grown for the amount of people that come, logistically, we have to be very cognizant of how we provide direction to people during the run to make sure they stay safe. So we've had to be on our toes, you know, every step of the way and just make sure the event in its entirety is really safe for people and we provide really good communication and direction.
So you presumably have to sit down with law enforcement, with Sacramento City, et cetera. How does that go? What are their concerns, and what's the give and take there?
Well, I think first and foremost, you're right. We work with the fire department, the ambulance. We work with first responders. We work with the police department. And really, first and foremost, it's about if there's a scenario where people need to get out of their
mm-hmm.
house
mm-hmm.
to a hospital, for example, we have to make sure that we mitigate and provide clean routes. And just there's a lot of preparation behind the scenes to ensure that the people that aren't involved in the run, or even if they are, if there's a mishap, that they can get out of these crowds
right.
and make sure. So that's probably number one. Number two is just, you know, we take a lot of pride and we take a lot of time in making sure the folks that aren't involved in the race for whatever reason are minimally impacted,
mm-hmm.
Particularly if their house is on the event trail.
Right. Yeah, I always think of, you know, 30,000 people, somebody within the race, you know, turning an ankle or maybe having some kind of a medical emergency. And I don't think so much about, well, suppose somebody in a home has a medical emergency or heaven forbid, has a fire or something. How do first responders get through a crowd to get to that? That's
yeah.
That takes a lot of good logistical planning.
Well, that and one of the main things that happens, believe it or not, just because the crowds are so big, is lost children.
Yeah, well, I bet. Yeah.
So we spend a lot of time making sure we have points of interest, points for families, lots of volunteers and staff on hand to make sure that if something like this happens, that we just, you know, do the best we possibly can to keep everybody comfortable and safe. And I will say that the staff and the volunteers have done a tremendous job over the years with that. And, yes, people get a turned ankle, but I think, you know, it's all about how do you respond to something. And
right.
I think we've done a darn good job of taking care of these things.
I've never seen a report the next day in the paper that was anything but positive or on TV that night. You know, I mean, I'm sure you've had the minor glitches, but the overall community, the community, not just the participants, but the community itself really supports this. You know, it's one of the great feel-good events of the year.
Well, we're blessed. I mean, and you know, we take a lot of pride in being able to own and manage the event. It's a big undertaking, but, you know, there's a lot of silver linings to owning and managing the Run to Feed the Hungry. You become very good at logistics, and our business is logistics. So it's actually a perfect marriage, and every year we do this, we hone our skills a little bit more, particularly on the distribution of food out in the county.
So speaking of that, it's been so interesting to follow the news, interesting, sometimes troubling, to follow the news as COVID kind of went up and down and got pretty darn serious and then went back down, and now we seem to be in a down where some of the things that people expected, when unemployment ran out, suddenly everybody is, you know, going to go get a job, the economy's going to hum, and some of that hasn't quite happened that way, the way it seemed the experts were saying it would happen. How has that affected you as, you know, as unemployment has run out for a lot of people? Many businesses are still saying, we can't go full bore. We don't have enough workers. And we still have, you know, all the COVID concerns. And a lot of people still afraid to go back to work or working from home or working reduced hours.
Well, it's been super challenging. I mean, I'll just take our own organization. You know, I mean, people have anxiety about this pandemic. People have struggles with their own families and their children and daycare. And, you know, I really feel for people that are affected by the pandemic in that way, especially children, seniors that are homebound, et cetera. The biggest impact has been just if you think about losing your job, even temporarily, then add on inflation and the cost of goods going up, and the fact that you may have gotten some reprieve on your rent, but things are going to be due right away, and you know you're going to owe some back rent.
Right.
It's a perfect storm for people to very, very slowly recover, and so what we're bracing for is the demand for our services is going to be high for quite some time. And so we're trying to be very planful and mindful in terms of the delivery of our services, really trying to take good care of people because there's just so much uncertainty and there's actually quite high anxiety. And then you tag on the holidays coming, and we know that folks that have a very difficult time with cost of living, you know, it's very sad to think that they're going to struggle through the holidays, particularly folks with children. So, you know, we take all those things into account, but the pandemic has been extremely impactful to our organization.
Yeah, I mean, I look just, Blake, just at the price of gasoline and think of people that either are looking for a job or people who are commuting to maybe a medium or low wage job, but they're commuting 20, 30, 40 miles each way a day. It's the sticker shock on that. The hit to the budget is really enormous. Has the price of gasoline affected your operation?
It has, but I would say that when you talk about families that are already struggling, the impact to their wallet is much greater on a grand scale. And I'm telling you, it's very difficult for folks right now. I can tell you.
Has the amount of food that you're required to put out or need to put out to meet the demand, has that gone down at all?
It has not. So the demand for food has gone up. And so far, you know, thank the Lord, with donors and with assistance from corporate America, assistance from individuals, assistance from the federal and state government, we have been able to provide and meet the need. Now, if you ask me what that looks like 3 years from now, I would be concerned. But I think for the our projections are we will have enough food, ample supply, and we are actually seeking new partners, non-traditional food pantry type partners, to even get more food out. School districts, hospitals, non-traditional food program. So if you think of a senior care facility or you think of child care facilities, anywhere where we can meet the need of folks that are already, you know, in their normal activities. Mm-hmm. We're going to try to do, and we're going to try to expand our partnerships, to make sure that as much food gets out throughout the county as possible.
I know for a long while there, you lost a lot of your senior volunteers with the availability of vaccinations and availability of boosters now to people over 65. Have you been able to get some of them back?
We have, and I think that's a great question, because I think there's a misconception that we don't have senior volunteers. No, I mean, honestly, they're the backbone of our volunteer work. They've come back. Some are obviously cautious. We take a lot of precaution with them. But because of the vaccine rollout and the focus on the seniors, we've had the majority of our seniors come back, and God, we are so thankful to have all of those folks. They're just wonderful, and we couldn't do the work without them.
Yeah, you know, it's so interesting because, you know, my wife and I, you know, we got vaccinated right away and everything. We had four teenagers. They couldn't be vaccinated, you know. And
right.
You know, and it's like, wow, how do you avoid contact with all this? They finally could, you know, when it went down to 12. But below that, you've got a huge group of kids who are in school, who are out in their activities, who are bringing it home, you know, and they're not yet cleared for vaccine, and probably will be, but maybe not. And it's just even people who are doing their best to, you know, follow all the rules or all the recommendations, I'd rather say it than rules, but it's still ever present in our lives.
Oh, it is, and particularly for seniors with health conditions and families with young children. I mean, they're just constantly juggling things, and my heart goes out to families with young children. I have a lot of staff. We have a lot of staff with employees with young children, and it's very stressful, to juggle it all. And so my heart goes out for them for sure.
Yeah, so many families have two full-time breadwinners just to pay the rent or make ends meet, and you've got two or three little ones that have to go to daycare, and you're afraid to take them to daycare, or the daycare is shut down, or, you know, it's just and there's really no way to protect them. I mean, they can wear their mask and they can wash their hands and they can do all those things, but it's out there, and especially the Delta variant, very virulent and apparently primarily airborne. So
yeah, and we're hoping that things slow down and subside. I mean, the only, you know, the concern obviously all of us have is that the flu season's coming, and that just exacerbates folks' concern. And, you know, how do you decipher between whether you have COVID and whether you have a regular flu? I mean, there's just a lot to manage right now. So I mean, you know, All, companies with employees, you know, there's just, it's constant challenge. And, I just think you have to be sincere and compassionate when you're dealing with, you know, not only employees, but volunteers coming. I mean, everyone has concerns. And so, today looks different than it used to, for sure.
Yeah. I mean, every time somebody sneezes, you know, the school that our son goes to, he's a junior in high school. If you have a COVID symptom, you have to stay home for X period of time, you know, and you're like, holy cow, what's a COVID symptom? It seems like everything is a COVID symptom. You know, you lose your sense of taste, your knee hurts, it's like, oh, that might be COVID. I've never seen a disease that has such a varied symptoms.
Yeah, and I'll tell you, again, going back to the folks that reach out to us for services, you know, they it's a very difficult situation. And, for a lot of us that don't worry economically, we are impacted by gasoline, the price of bacon, the price of eggs, for sure. But when you're already struggling to manage all that and to be worried about, are you going to have enough money, is really, really difficult. So I'm just, I feel blessed that we're able to provide the services. I'm proud of our staff, our donors, our volunteers, the way they, you know, reach out and have compassion and care for folks. It's just, it's really cool. And then you throw the Run to Feed the Hungry in there, and we have a nice celebration. It's just, you know, it's the times that we're coming into are really special.
Indeed, they are. You know, and I was reading the other day about Social Security, and the average Social Security recipient gets $1,500 a month. And for many of them, that's it. That is it. And you go, oh, my gosh, how can anybody live on $1,500 a month?
Well, and your average Social Security recipient probably, and I hope, you know, I'm not trying to generalize, but the average Social Security recipient is probably on at least one medication. Right?
Absolutely.
So, I mean, we find oftentimes, particularly when we dug in during COVID helping seniors, that oftentimes, you know, you go into a senior's house, you open the refrigerator, and there's hardly anything in there.
Mm-hmm.
It absolutely breaks your heart. So the days of folks needing food assistance one time a month are pretty much over.
Mm-hmm.
Especially in California, the cost of living, the cost of housing, the cost of medication, the cost of utilities, the cost of a car and gasoline are exceeding their ability. So, you know, they're relying on our services more than they ever have. And, you know, we take pride in not only having ample food supply, but having a very high quality ample food supply.
Yeah, that's the thing that is, I think has changed over the years, in from just trying to get food almost of anything out to people just to satisfy their hunger, keep them alive, if you will, to really emphasizing nutrition and health in addition to feeding their hunger.
Yeah, and we pay attention to, sodium levels in food and different, you know, there's a lot of people in our country, in our state, in our city that are diabetic. So there's the days of just getting donations and handing them out those are way behind us. We are really trying to make solid strategic decisions on the type of food we source and, you know, try to communicate and distribute accordingly to make sure that, you know, we're nourishing folks. We're not just throwing food at them.
So I can imagine somebody listening right now saying, I'm in need. I think there are people that fall through the cracks. They don't know how to access the need, which is one of the reasons, you know, we have you on so often. And we're so thrilled that you take the time to be with us. If somebody out there right now, talk to them and say, okay, this is what you do. This is how we're here to help you. This is what you need to do to get that help.
Bob, I really appreciate that. I would say, firstly, don't be embarrassed.
Right.
Don't stigmatize the fact that you may be in need. And go on our website. We have a food finder. Type in your zip code, and what will come up is all the places that you can go to get food. Now,
mm-hmm.
If you don't want to go on our website, then you can call 916-456-1980, and we have trained professionals to walk you through the process. But again, I will emphasize, there are so many people that don't want, you know, I'll give you an example. I'm 73 years old, on Social Security, the cost of living is high, I need help. I don't want to ask for help because I don't want to take food out of somebody else's mouth.
Mm-hmm.
Or I'm embarrassed to ask for help. I would just say, if you're in need, please ask, and we will make sure we help you in the most dignified manner, because we do have high-quality food. You may not need assistance for very long. You may know a neighbor with children that needs help. What we try to do is destigmatize the fact that people think, oh, well, I shouldn't ask for food or I'm embarrassed, and mm-hmm. just try to make it a normal transaction where, you know, people, you know, find value in it and avail themselves of these services, even if it's temporary.
Absolutely. So how do they go to your website?
So sacramentofoodbank.org.
Very good.
Click on Food Finder or call 916-456-1980. And if you have a neighbor or a community member that you'd like to help do the same thing, we want to be able to help you and provide good, nutritious food for you and your family.
And if somebody doesn't have adequate transportation, is there? I know there are a lot of places around. I mean, you're not going to ever be very far from one of the distribution sites.
Yeah, you know, I'm pretty confident that you are going to find multiple sites fairly close.
Mm-hmm.
I know there's some transportation services. You can also ask a friend to pick up the food for you.
Sure.
So I think that there's lots of alternatives, but please don't be embarrassed by asking for help. And I think that you'll be pleasantly surprised at the quality of food that you're going to receive.
Very good. And finally, How can people sign up for Run to Feed the Hungry on Thanksgiving morning?
Yeah, go to runtofeedthehungry.com. You can also go to our website. You can sign up as a physical participant, or you can go virtual. If you are going to be out of town, or you just simply got to focus on cooking the Thanksgiving Day meal and the rest of your family, just sign up virtual. We'll make sure we get you a T-shirt and a bib. And, you know, you can, you know, feel good about providing financial contributions to the organization, and you can trust that we will steward your donations very well to make sure people are taken care of.
Now, how many people are involved in the design of the T-shirt, and how early in the year do they start designing it?
Oh, my gosh. Well, you know, over the years, we've tried a lot of different things, including opening it up to different people in the community to send in some artwork. And I think that's something that I'd like to open up and do again. We have a committee, a wonderful committee that has been, some people come, some people go. We've had some people on it for 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
We have several graphic designers that help us out, and we kind of, throw it around, to the committee and kind of get some ideas, and then we kind of try to settle on conceptually somewhat of the artwork, and then we let the graphic designers do their thing.
Yeah, you know, I mean, there's such great conversation starters. You'd be in Boise, and you're in the grocery store, and here's some guy wearing a Run to Feed the Hungry T-shirt. You go, I'm from Sacramento. I know about that. You know, it's a great conversation starter.
Yeah, I'll tell you a quick story. So we had a staff member wear her Run to Feed the Hungry. This is about 5 years ago. We had a staff member wear her Run to Feed the Hungry shirt to South Africa, and she was in an open market. And there's a picture of a guy that is from South Africa that had the Run to Feed the Hungry shirt on, and he did it when he came and visited his family.
Oh, wow. That's pretty good.
So to your point.
That's very good. Well, Blake, thanks so much for taking the time to be with us, but really thank you for all you do, for all your volunteers do, all your staff does. You're doing the Lord's work out there in the vineyard, and boy, it's necessary, and you're touching people that they don't know who's doing all this, but you're helping so many people. So thanks for that, and we'll pray for the continued success of the Sacramento Food Bank and Family Services.
Well, thank you, Bob, and thank you to all the folks that are listening out there. We're blessed to have all of your support. So, and thank you for the opportunity again today, Bob.
Great. We'll talk to you again soon, Blake.
You bet.
Yeah, take care. That's Blake Young, the president and CEO of Sacramento Food Bank and Family Services. It was such a great, great organization here. You know, Gabe, there are a lot of groups out there doing a lot of great work. Sacramento Life Center, Loaves and Fishes, Sacramento Food Bank and Family Services, St. Vincent de Paul Society, and the Gabriel Project. I can go on and on and on and on, and all the wonderful projects the Knights of Columbus are involved in. And it's wonderful to be able to talk to these people and see the great work they're doing. And if you have never done the Run to Feed the Hungry, this make it this year. It's early, not early, early, but it's early on Thanksgiving morning. Doesn't take up your whole day. It is beautiful out in East Sacramento, and the leaves are turning color. Some of them are falling on your head. It's just a great, great, great. If you don't have to be a runner, it's the run to feed the hungry. It's also the walk. It's also, you know, you don't have to be, you know, have fancy gear and fancy shoes or anything else. Just show up in your sweatpants and give it a run. We'll take a quick break. Back with more on the Bishop's Hour right after this. This portion of the Bishop's Hour is brought to you by a grant from the St. Vincent de Paul Society. Drop by and shop at their thrift store, a beautiful, beautiful thrift store at 2275 Watt Avenue. Open Mondays through Saturdays from 10 to 8 and Sundays from 11 to 6. They also accept donations at the store, donations of furniture, appliances, clothing, books, everyday household items. Your donations help to fund the many projects of the St. Vincent de Paul Society throughout the Diocese of Sacramento. Do such wonderful, wonderful work, and the thrift store is one of the ways they raise the funds to help people throughout the diocese, and also many of their clients are able to access the thrift store for items that they need. You can give them a call. They will come pick it up as well, but you can give them a call. They're at 916-972-1212. And remember, again, the thrift store is open 7 days a week at 2275 Watt Avenue right here in Sacramento. Well, Bishop Soto refers to Christ the King Retreat Center as the jewel of the diocese, and indeed it is. What a beautiful oasis it is. It's located in Citrus Heights, right in the hustle and bustle of the city, and you feel like you're getting away from it all when you turn off the main road and just come into Christ the King Passionist Retreat Center. Christ the King has served Northern California and the Diocese of Sacramento for over 60 years through parish weekend retreats, individual spiritual direction, and a variety of other programs. For information on all the programs that they offer, including residential programs, give them a call. They're at 916-725-4720, or you can visit them at 6520 Van Maren Lane in Citrus Heights. And we certainly thank the St. Vincent de Paul Society and Christ the King Passionist Retreat Center for their fine and longstanding support of the Bishop's Hour.
Hello, this is Jennifer Campbell, Director of Trinity Pines Catholic Center. You're listening to the Bishop's Hour with Bob Dunning.
Thank you, Jennifer. Thanks for all you do here in the Diocese of Sacramento. The Day of Giving, Thursday, November 4, for St. Francis Catholic High School, or all girls, all young women high school here in Sacramento, November 4, celebrating 10 years of Thankful Thursday, and it's a big fundraiser for them. So go to stfrancis.org/ and Day of Giving, and that should be it. Well, we are pleased to welcome in the couple of the month, the cover couple from the Catholic Herald, Juan Carlos and Bridget. How are you?
Great.
Doing awesome.
This is too wonderful. We need you here in person, really. You know, we need to see the smiles on your faces. I'm looking at this Catholic Herald, and it's just wild and crazy and wonderful.
We're definitely smiling just like the picture right now.
Yep.
Bridget, you know that you married a complete celebrity in the Diocese of Sacramento.
It's so funny that you say that, because I tease him about that all the time, and I have a collection of stories that I like to tell about his celebrity status.
Well, everybody knows who he is. I know, you know, it's funny, Juan Carlos, I'm sure you've had this experience. I've had this experience where you go out and people have no idea who you are, and by looking at you, and then one at some point they come up to you and they say, "It's your voice. You're the guy on the radio."
Yep, you know?
I had an experience one time when I was working for KFBK doing a night talk show, and we finally did one of those public appearance where you go out to Macy's at Christmas time or something and do your show from there. And one person came up to me and said, "I'm a regular listener, and I wonder where Bob Dunning is." And I said, I'm Bob Dunning. And she says, no, you're not. Like, based on the voice, she had this image of what I would look like. And
yeah.
I didn't look like it. And she was really disappointed.
Yeah.
I'm sure you get that one.
Oh, yeah. People imagine a tall guy, really skinny or buff. And then when they see me, I only 5'5", you know, 200 pounds. They're like, no, is that really you? Yep. Sorry to disappoint you.
Oh, that's very, very funny. Well, Bridget, why don't you guys tell us your story? I'll let the both of you take turns. Tell us your story. We're talking about meeting online and getting married.
Yeah. Well, as I think most people know now, we met on Catholic Match. I have been on and off Catholic Match for most of my adult life. I'm 32 now, and I think the first time I ever signed on was when I got back to the U.S. after a two-year mission in the Philippines. So I think I was 24 when I first signed on. So I was off and on there for about 7 or 8 years.
Mm-hmm.
I had a couple previous relationships with guys that I met on Catholic Match. They didn't work out, obviously.
Thanks be to God.
Yeah. And I got back on after being off of the site for about a year and a half. I got back on during the shutdown last year. I was home from work and had a little bit more free time on my hands, and I thought, well, maybe it's time to give it another try. And I viewed a few profiles, one of which was my husband.
Yeah, it was really awesome, actually. I was on Catholic Match. I got on Catholic Match because a couple, friend of mine, they gave me a birthday gift in November. And I was, it was just worth the try. You know, I met a couple of people. A couple of ladies, wonderful ladies on Catholic Match, but it wasn't, we went to one date only, and then, like, it didn't work out. And so I was just losing hope on the app, you know. I was a little bit skeptical at the beginning, and then I was in my last month of the subscription, and then I saw the Bridget, so my profile, and then I went and checked her profile, because you have the ability to see who saw you, and so you can message. And so I did send a message. It was April 1st when I sent a message, and she didn't reply. I thought she played me, you know, April Fool's. But, it took her, like, 2 weeks to reply because she had to put it in prayer and the sermon if it was the right decision to establish a friendship at that moment with me. And so, the rest is history about it, but yes, it was really beautiful, you know, being and using the media, you know, using the media, especially Catholic media, to be in touch with another Catholics who are also seeking the same, you know, and same values and same virtues that you are seeking, that you're trying to practice. You know, it's not that we're perfect, as Bridget and I were sinners too, but we want to be the best version of ourselves, and that has been the goal.
So how does this work? I know there are a lot of listeners have, including me, who have no idea how it works, and how is it different? How is Catholic Match different than all these other ones I see advertised?
So I think that I can talk about that because I have experience on other sites, never on Catholic Match, but just on other sites, and other sites are not too holy, you know. Even if you say that you are looking for something good, and then when you find out, you have to be careful, you know, tasting the waters out there.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, the good thing here is, like, Catholic Match restricts you from, like, message too many people or send too many messages to the same person, and like, if you send a message, if I send a message and I don't get a reply, and, you know, I can now continue, you know, stalking this person. I don't know, but it has a lot of security circles that it makes it safe. But at the same time, you also have to be careful with everybody.
Yeah, I mean, it has a lot in common with some of the other sites. I think I checked out right, like maybe just match back when I was younger. And you know, the bones of the site are similar in a lot of ways. You create a profile, and you have different categories that you can say about yourself. Catholic Match has a few additional things in terms of answering questions about what church teachings you agree with and how Catholic you are, kind of, and mm-hmm. like how often you attend Mass and some of those things. So you can kind of gauge how serious another person is about their faith by reading through their profile. And they also have some great questions about, you know, your favorite saints and your favorite ways to pray. So you can, besides just gauging the person's personality, you can also learn a little bit, if they choose to fill those sections out, you can learn a little bit about their spirituality as well.
So does Catholic Match recommend you go to confession if you've embellished your resume?
I'm sure it does, but it's making sense of everybody.
I mean, you're supposed to put, I mean, my mom always said, you know, if you were going to go out on a date or you're hoping to meet somebody, she says, you got to put your best foot forward.
Yeah.
You know, even if it's maybe you not your best foot. You know, be on your best behavior. Yeah.
And I think also, you know, like for those who have tried or may want to try, you know, just a small tip, like never talk about yourself unless the other person asks you to talk about yourself.
Right.
You know, you want to get to know the other person, and that means a lot. When we went on our first date in person with Bridget, it was, well, it's now my wife, and I love to say my wife, is because we were really interested in the other, one another. You know, I wanted to know her story. I wanted to know you, and then she wanted to know me, and that was really awesome. That it was way different than other sites.
So, it comes time to actually. At what point does somebody say, "Okay, I think we should meet"?
Well, in our case, you know, we had the pandemic concerns as part of our conversation, so that was a little bit of an unusual twist. But even with that in place, I think from the time that we started messaging online, within a week we were progressing to phone calls and video calls, and I think about 3 weeks after we started messaging, we had our first date in person. Mm-hmm. It may have even been sooner if it weren't for the pandemic.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it took a lot of social distancing and hand sanitizer too.
Yeah.
Bridget, does Juan Carlos look better with a mask on or worse?
Oh, I love seeing his whole face. So,
were you really nervous, holding your breath before you met? Like, but when you decided to meet, and then it's like, okay, here it comes. I don't want to be disappointed. Did you steel yourself, so to speak?
I think I always have done that a little bit on first dates because, you know, you get to know someone and you kind of start to get excited about the person that you're seeing from the phone call. Mm-hmm. No chat, and I just remember when I first met Juan, like when we finally saw each other in person, and I heard him talking, and he was the same exact person in real life that he had been in all of our chats up to that point. I sort of started to relax a little bit. I was super excited for our first date. I could feel that there was potential between us, mm-hmm. And you know, we just have so much in common, and our worldviews are very similar. So there was a great foundation for it. And when we met in person, and everything just seemed to line up with who I had sort of imagined him to be, that I started to relax and just enjoy it more.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because, you know, we've got four teenagers, and well, one of them just turned 20, so I guess they're not four teenagers anymore. But you know, and they ask the questions, and they and my wife will say, you know, you want this and you want that and all these things, but you can add it all up and it gets to 100. He or she gets 100 out of 100, and then you meet and there's just no magic.
Right.
And it's one of those things you say, I should be madly in love with this person, but for some reason I'm not. You know, it's something that it sort of bypasses the brain, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, that connection in person is a really important element.
Sure.
And I think one of the things that I've seen in the past with myself and with other women is that sometimes you'll meet a guy who just wants to kind of drag out the online element of the of the relationship for a long period of time. And in my mind, there's just no point to that, because
right.
there's no way to gauge if you have that connection and if the guy is really who he says he is, if he has that integrity, and if you feel comfortable with him. And that's all so important for a dating relationship and future marriage.
Yeah, and something that I would like to add to this is on this point is that do not be afraid who you are. You know, if you're listening and thinking about online dating, so many people, they try to, you know, like to Photoshop their pictures to make them look good so it can be attractive. And you know, and when you present in person, then it's totally a different,
yep.
you know, a different guy, a different lady. So, you know, do not be afraid who you are. You know, God has created you perfect, you know, and so that is also part of, you know, like being ready to date. You know, it's accepting the person that you are, you know, with all your gift and also your mistakes and physically, you know, and to be being, you know, the reflection of the Holy Spirit. That is very
yeah.
important, and always be yourself.
Yeah, you know, it's excellent advice. It seems like real common sense, because who you are is going to come out real quickly anyway. You know,
yeah.
you know, and you have to, for a relationship to work, at least in my mind, both people have to be who they are. You have to be comfortable in your own skin, or you're never going to be comfortable in a relationship.
Yeah, absolutely, and I think it's really important to be prepared for dating. Like Juan Carlos mentioned, I took 2 weeks after signing into Catholic Match because I wasn't 100% sure that I was ready to get back into that again, that I was in that place. But I had spent a couple of years beforehand in kind of a healing process and coming to a really clear understanding of who I am and strengthening my relationship with God, and also really getting a lot clearer on what my intentions and desires were for dating. And I did make that list that you mentioned before. I had a list of my non-negotiables in a man, but I also spent a lot of time considering, okay, I have this list. Now, who do I need to become as a woman to be the woman who's ready for this guy? And I think that's a really key point. A lot of people will tell you that you need to have a list of what you want in another person, but we need to spend at least as much time preparing ourselves and growing and allowing God to heal and to transform us into the person that's ready for that person that we're looking for.
Yeah, very well said. Bridget, what were you doing in the Philippines for 2 years?
I was working with a Catholic nonprofit organization, doing some youth development work with a great organization in the Philippines. I went with Fidesco, which is connected with the Emmanuel community.
Right. And it was a good experience.
It was wonderful, yeah. I did it right out of college, which is a great time to go and do like a long-term mission like that, because I didn't have other commitments here, like a family or a job that I needed to be responsible to. And I learned so much. When you go and do volunteer work internationally, a lot of times you get to take on way more responsibility than you would ever get to take on in a typical job. So as a 22-year-old straight out of college, experiencing a new culture, taking on all this responsibility, it was a big period of growth for me.
Boy, that's great. That's great. Have you been back to the Philippines since?
Not yet, but we were just listing off our dream travel destinations this past weekend, and that's definitely on the list. I'd love to take Juan Carlos there with me.
Juan Carlos, what's your number one on the list, the dream vacation?
Well, you know, it's so many places that we want to go. Like, you know, you want to go to Asia. We want to travel together to Europe. But I haven't been ever, and I'm really devoted to Our Lady of Guadalupe, and I haven't ever been at Tepeyac in Mexico City. So I really want to go with my wife and thank her for bringing bridges to my life, and so and also Jesus Christ, you know. So that would be probably my number one. And after that, then we go to Philippines, we go to Singapore, we go to Japan, you know. But yeah, that's my number one.
Well, go on December the 12th.
Oh, yeah. That is actually our engagement. It's going to be our engagement anniversary.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah,
oh,
December
how wonderful. 12. How wonderful. That lady is a stalker, I'll tell you. She's been a part of my life since I was a little kid. Everywhere I look, there's Our Lady of Guadalupe, you know. She's ever present, especially in California. It's mind-boggling in California how iconic she is, and it's wonderful. I mean, it's just one. The part of the story I really like is that, you know, Juan Carlos was sort of so, I guess, terrified or knocked off his pins, you know, by, you know, they tried to take a different route home to avoid her. You know, I'm thinking, you're not going to avoid her. She's going to find you.
She's going to find me on the way. Probably the plane is going to have to land in Mexico City.
Did I say Juan Carlos? I meant Juan Diego.
Juan Diego, okay. Yeah,
but she's going to, we're going to mix those names up. Well, that's wonderful. And you guys are all settled in now. When did you get married?
So we got married on my birthday, actually. It was the only free Saturday in June, and Juan Carlos had it booked before he even proposed to me. He was pretty confident.
That's great. What's the date?
June 5th.
June the 5th. And where'd you get married?
At Our Lady of Guadalupe.
Oh, right here in Sacramento.
Sacramento, yeah.
Oh, how wonderful. Right, 10 feet from where Juan Carlos works.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. Oh, that's wonderful. Well, just God's blessings to the both of you. And it's such a great story. And, you know, the cover, I think the cover photo on the Catholic Herald says it all. And it says what all of those, everybody that's married or everybody's looking, that's what they're looking for, is the joy and the happiness that the two of you are exuding there. So congratulations, and may the good Lord bless and keep you both.
Thank you so much.
Hey, thank you so much. And Bridget, Juan Carlos is everywhere, so we'll run into you guys in person at some event real soon, I'm sure.
Yeah,
I'm sure we will, Bob. And thank you for having us. Thank you for the time and the awesome questions.
They're really good. Well,
it's an awesome conversation too. And thank you for all the people who are praying, you know, for their spouse. God will provide. That is your true vocation.
God will provide. Absolutely. Very well said. Take care, you two. That's Juan Carlos and Bridget, and they are they're on the cover of the current Catholic Herald, and it's just wonderful, wonderful story. It's like they're like two kids that are just finishing each other's sentences. That's going to do it for us for today. Thanks for listening. God bless everyone. This portion of the Bishop's Hour is brought to you by a grant from the Mercy Foundation, enriching lives in the Sacramento region through Sisters of Mercy ministries in healthcare, education, housing, and the care for the poor and elderly. For the Mercy Foundation, philanthropy is one of the most powerful expressions of compassion and love. Just as many people in our community need a hand, countless others are reaching out to them with comfort and hope. You can express your care and concern for the less fortunate with a gift to the Mercy Foundation. You can give them a call, 916-851-2000. 2700. That's 916-851-2700. And you can be confident that fully 100% of your contribution will support the Sisters of Ministry of Mercy Ministry or ministries that you choose. And what a wonderful treasure Easter's Catholic Books and Gifts has been for all of us here in the diocese as they transition into new ownership and management. They continue to offer wonderful workshops, wonderful resources for the Catholic community throughout the Diocese of Sacramento. Not only does Easter's provide a wide array of Catholic books, both current releases and longtime classics, but they also sponsor a number of valuable workshops and lectures throughout the year. They're located at 6916 Sunrise Boulevard in Citrus Heights. Give them a call, 916-338-7272. We also receive a generous underwriting support by Crumley & Associates, a private wealth advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services. If you have questions about retirement, Crumley & Associates can help you with their confident retirement approach that can help define a clear roadmap to get you where you want to go. You can contact them, get all the details at Crumley & Associates, 7956 California Avenue in Fair Oaks. They're at 916-638-4600. That's 916-638-4600. And we are certainly appreciative of the fine and longstanding support of the Mercy Foundation, of Easter's Catholic Books and Gifts, and of Crumley and Associates. We'd like to thank all the wonderful people and organizations, businesses in town and throughout the Diocese of Sacramento who have provided underwriting for the Bishop's Hour, some in the last few years, some have been with us for a very long time. If you would like to be an underwriter for the Bishop's Radio Hour, it's a wonderful opportunity to support this mission and also to support the diocese and also to get some recognition for your organization or for your business. The easiest way to do this is to give us a shout, send us an email, radio@scd.org, and we can give you all the details about helping to underwrite the Bishop's Radio Hour. Again, that's radio@scd.org.
I was sure by now, God, you would have reached down and wiped our tears away. Stepped in and saved the day. But once again, I say amen, and it's still raining. But as the thunder rolls, I barely hear you whisper through the rain, I'm with you. And as your mercy falls, praise the God who gives and takes away. And I'll praise you in this storm, and I will lift my hands, for you are who you are, no matter where I am. And every tear I've cried, you hold in your hand, you never left my side. I remember when I stumbled in the wind, you heard my cry to you and raised me up again. But my strength is almost gone, how can I carry on if I can't find you? As the thunder